Welcome to episode 194 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read The Star Wars Lucas Draft by J.W. Rinzler. And now, the cast begins.
Awesome.
Beautiful. Oh, hey, by the way, mentioning the Marvel movies, did you guys see all the announcements?
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. There's gonna be a Captain Marvel movie.
But
so
dude,
excited.
James, oh my god, the trailer for Age of Ultron is just like so good.
Yeah, there's tons of little things in there everywhere.
Like there's like they announced a bunch of awesome movies, but we haven't even gotten to Avengers 2 yet, and that is already like blowing my mind. Did you see the extended trailer where Thor, like, challenges everyone to pick up the hammer?
No, not yet.
So they released an extended trailer, like, yesterday or the day before? And there's a scene in the trailer. You know the scene in the trailer from last week where Ultron, like, it's the Iron Man suit, like, walking all retarded?
Yeah.
So what happens, they show what happens immediately before that. And that's, like, the Avengers joking around and, like, I bet you guys can't pick up the hammer. And so it's, like, Tony, and then Tony and Rhodey team up with their, like, Iron Man War Machine gloves, like, trying to pick it up. And then Cap picks it up, tries to pick it up, and it budges. And Thor has this, like, really worried look on his face. Just Cap can almost pick it up.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And then Cap is almost Thor.
Man, and James Spader just sounds like a fucking badass as Ultron.
Yeah.
And he looks awesome.
Yeah, the Ultron looks really, really good. I had a hard time explaining to my wife what Ultron was, because there's so many different iterations and so many different ways, and I think the way they're going to go in the movie is like the tons and tons of Ultrons as Ultron.
I think what's going to happen, too, is like instead of... Because there's Hank Pym's not in the universe yet. I mean, maybe they'll introduce him. Probably not, especially because there's an Ant-Man movie coming out later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll probably be like the Jarvis, you know, Jarvis, the computer that...
Oh, yeah, the computer AI.
I think it'll be something like that.
Yeah, probably. Well, I mean, they might also intro Ant-Man in Avengers and then roll him into his own movie after.
That's true. They might introduce Hank Pym because the Hank Pym is in the Ant-Man movie, but the Ant-Man movie is... Ant-Man in the movie is Scott Lang.
Oh, okay.
Who's being played by Paul Rudd.
Okay.
Like, Hank Pym is in it, but he's, like, older. And it's played by Michael Douglas, I want to say. I forget.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's Michael Douglas. Oh, so, it is Michael Douglas as Hank Pym.
Oh, I like that. I think that works well.
Should be cool. Because Paul Rudd's good. So it's Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly.
Okay.
She's usually pretty good. Somebody named Corey Stoll. I'm not familiar with that actor.
I don't know who that is.
Still, I mean, should be good.
I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, why the fuck not?
Yeah, it's going to be another Marvel movie, right? Yeah. Why not?
Although, I don't know. I will say Guardians of the Galaxy renewed my faith because, I don't know, I watched Iron Man 3 and was just like, and then I rewatched the first Avengers movie and was like, oh, wow, this was better in the theater.
Well, so here's the thing. Like a lot of people are like, oh, man, Guardians was the best one. And, you know, I love the comic. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my favorite Marvel movie is actually Winter Soldier.
That was really good.
Because that was like it was everything I loved about Captain America and, like, Marvel and stuff. But it was just, like, a great movie. Like, I think if the characters had different names... It would still have been awesome. Like, if it wasn't a Marvel movie, if it was just, like, a spy movie,
yeah.
It still would have been awesome.
No, I agree.
I really liked Winter Soldier a lot.
I think that one, the first Captain America movie, and Guardians of the Galaxy are kind of my three strongest. But the others, like, I'll watch them in the theater, and then I'll go back and take a look at them. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know, like, on the second watch, I always think, like, oh, like, this went on way longer than it needed to.
Yeah, the first Avengers is pretty long.
Yeah.
It's got some slow parts in it. I mean, it's still a great movie.
Yeah, it's just not, I don't know, it's not a classic for me, but something has to be.
Some people love Iron Man 2, and I don't really love Iron Man 2.
I was not a fan of Iron Man 2.
Was that the one with Hammer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite is, like, as far as the movies go, my favorite's definitely Winter Soldier.
I don't know, I still like the first Thor a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dislike any of them, but if I had to pick my favorite, it would be Winter Soldier.
That one's, I mean, just off the top of my head, if I had to pick one, I would probably pick the first Thor.
First Captain America for me.
Yeah, that one's so good, too.
Andy, I was telling David to go watch John Wick. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's the new Keanu Reeves movie, and the Russian mafia comes and kills his puppy and steals his car, and he goes batshit. It had, like, a 100% at opening weekend on Rotten Tomatoes. It's still at 86. It's a classic shoot-em-up, and, like, it was really, really, really good if you like shoot-em-up type movies.
Awesome. I'm down for that, because one of my favorite movies is shoot-em-up.
Oh, my God.
That one, what's the other one that I really like? Oh, Ninja Assassin.
Okay, you will like
Ninja Assassin.
You didn't like Ninja Assassin?
No.
It was so bad.
Hey, but you know what movie I like? Have you guys seen Lockout?
No.
Holy shit, I think it's on Netflix. You guys need to watch Lockout.
John Wick is a movie that is good because it's good and not good because it's bad.
Okay.
Like, it actually has, like, pretty good writing, and there are some good jokes that are timed well, and it is, like, overall pretty awesome action movie, so I highly recommend it.
You guys ready?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another revised episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
Jen.
Hello.
And this week we read The Star Wars by J.W. Rinzler. This was the one that Dark Horse printed because they said, fuck it, we're gonna lose the license anyway. So let's go ahead and print George Lucas's first draft of Star Wars for shiggles.
It's not even the first. It doesn't even say first draft. It says original rough draft. And like, as far as if they had turned this into movie, man, it would have been pretty rough.
But yeah, this was from 2013. It was zero to eight. So I guess that's what, nine issues long?
Well zero is like.
Zero is just
really
like a bunch of background stuff. Yeah, it's not really the story at all.
It's like a,
It's an art book.
It's very nice looking.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. A lot of this comic is pretty nice looking. The covers are fucking great. I don't know. I read the singles, and the covers are every time I would pick them up, I was like, "This is cool."
Yeah, yeah. I have all the singles. I was when this was coming out. It was on my list. So yeah, I have all the singles too.
Yeah.
Some of the titles are great too. Like
yes,
I don't remember which one it is. I think maybe it's. Well, there's one where at the end of the issue it says "Next Issue Wookiee Madness."
So this
at the end of issue 5 it says "Next Wookiee Madness."
You know what, though? I gotta tell you, when I was reading that, I was like, okay, George Lucas has always said that the original idea was for Endor to be the planet of the Wookiees, and that always made much more sense to me. And watching this makes way more sense still than Ewoks.
Yeah, I mean, it's Yavin.
Yeah.
It's Yavin, right?
I mean, everything's not the same. Everything's different. It's all kind of screwed up. But, like, this... Just reading this, like, they're savages, basically. Their little technology is the same as the Ewoks was. But just because they have, like, a clan structure that's easily identifiable, and they're human-like enough, and they're bigger, they're taller, they're fierce, they're obviously muscular. Like, I would believe that these Wookiees could take over a base.
Like, the thing is, like, thinking back, like, of course, you know, hindsight is 20/20, yada yada. They could have just put the second Death Star around Kashyyyk.
Yeah, but I mean,
kept the name Endor and just put Wookiees instead of, you know, Ewoks. Because, I mean, there was already, we knew Chewbacca was around.
Yeah.
They had already done, like, the Star Wars Christmas special had Wookiee Life Day. I mean.
Oh, God, that fucking movie.
He could have done it. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember. There is a reason why, but I don't know. I don't remember what it was. It's the same reason they have Jar Jar. It's because they wanted something to sell for kids and to get kids excited about the movie.
They could have put, like, a child Wookiee. And please, they didn't need Jar Jar to get kids excited about Star Wars.
No, but
they really didn't.
That's you and I, that's the three of us talking about that from a story perspective, but not from a marketing person perspective. Anyway.
Look, if I was a marketing person and they showed me Jar Jar and they'd be like, this is going to hook kids, I'd be like, you know what? This is not going to hook kids. You know what's going to hook kids? Fucking laser swords.
Yes.
You already got laser swords.
I feel like part of the reason they included Jar Jar was so parents who lived in caves and had never seen Star Wars could look at it and be like, oh, it's not just lasers and guns and shit. It's funny characters. I'll take my child to it.
See, and that's the thing, though, is, like, rewatching the originals, R2-D2 and C-3PO are hilarious, especially if you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. And so I don't know which one of you guys put it in the notes. I'm guessing it was Jen, because David doesn't write notes. But the first question at the top...
I wrote notes for this one, sorry.
Really? Holy shit. Oh, sorry. So the first question is, if this had been the movie instead of A New Hope, would you have liked this movie?
Oh, that was my question, yes.
Okay. And, I mean, my gut reaction is yes, maybe not as much. One of the things I really, really love about Star Wars is the father-son dynamic and the redemption story and all of that kind of stuff. But this still has laser guns and lightsabers, and that's still sick.
I think if they had just taken this story without any cleanup, it would not have been a good movie. It's too much of a hot mess. There's like so much happening in these issues.
Yeah, it's just super rushed.
If they had kept like the characters the same, but just tightened it up, I think it would have been fine.
Okay, I agree with that as well. Especially if it had, you know, been released in the same year with the, you know, older special effects and things. I love that kind of setting. But assuming that they had cleaned up this very rough draft and made it more, you know, final.
Yeah, I think this could have been fine. I mean, I think all the important, like, story beats and... like ideas about character development, all that stuff is here. And then the like spectacle is also here.
Oh yeah.
Like
Andy said, there's still the Death Star.
There's like laser guns and spaceships and and lightsabers and droids and all that kind of stuff. I think this probably has too many characters. But
yeah.
But like I said, if they had tightened it up, it would have been fine. I think it would have done well. I mean, who's to say, really, like, would it have been successful? I don't know.
But you could have watched it and liked it.
Yeah, me, probably. So here's the thing, though. Like, I feel like my taste in media, like, I really love sci-fi and all that kind of stuff, is because of Star Wars.
Mm.
Like, because I remember as a kid, I don't remember, like, obviously I'm too young to have seen it in the theaters. I was born in 83 after Return of the Jedi came out. But Star Wars was still around. Like, there was the droids cartoon. I remember going to, like, McDonald's with my dad, and there was a Happy Meal that had, I remember getting a little plastic Y-Wing in the Happy Meal.
Dude, I got the fucking Death Star that when you spin it, it, like, came apart, and there was, like, sparks in the middle. That thing was fucking sick. I think that was from Taco Bell.
Well, Taco Bell had Star Wars stuff too, especially when they did the special edition re-release.
Yeah.
But I don't remember like watching Star Wars until like the early 90s probably. I'm sure I watched it like before then. Because we had a VHS of it. So I must have watched it. And I think that Star Wars really informed the taste I have nowadays. Obviously, I love Star Wars. Like, anybody who knows me knows how much I love Star Wars. One of my wife's friends that she met, like, who wasn't necessarily, like, a mutual friend she was my wife's friend before mine, commented one time, like, she was like, oh, you're not wearing a Star Wars shirt. And I was like, I don't wear a Star Wars shirt every day. And she was like, you have a lot of Star Wars shirts. And I was like, you know, I think you're probably right. I do.
Like, that's noticeable when you're not wearing a Star Wars shirt.
And, like, I look around my room. Like, I'm in my office right now. And, there's a bunch of Boba Fett figures. And
is there a direction or corner you can look at where you don't see something Star Wars related?
Well, if I look directly at the door... like, if I'm sitting by the window and I'm looking at the door, I can see General Grievous in the corner of my eye. Actually, there's a Boba Fett action figure directly in front of me on the desk. There's another Boba Fett action figure over there. Yeah, I mean, it's just pretty much it's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and I have a similar.
Go ahead.
I have a really similar thing, but for me, I feel like it's intertwined. Like it's chicken and egg. I don't know what came first, my love of sci-fi or Star Wars in particular. Because I had been a really, really big reader from a super young age. Like, whenever my family would go out to eat, I would bring a book. Whenever we would go shopping, I would bring a book. I always had a book with me growing up. I remember reading tons of sci-fi, and I remember watching Star Wars, and I don't remember which happened first.
I feel like Star Wars came first for me, but I remember the first book report I ever did, like real book report in junior high, was actually on
Jedi.
No, it was Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles.
Ah, yeah.
And I feel like that was like my first like sci-fi book that I read. But you know, I read stuff like, I remember as a kid reading like Robert Heinlein's Red Planet. You know, I was a pretty voracious reader as a kid too. I mean, that's probably why I got a degree in English, you know?
Yeah.
A degree in your ability to, it's basically a degree in reading comprehension.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a degree in I read good.
Like, certainly Star Wars isn't the only thing, but I feel like it was the beginning. Like I have a Boba Fett, like, vinyl action figure, and he's standing next to Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes vinyl figures, who are below a shelf that has the Avengers and Wolverine and Galactus and Doctor Doom and a Skrull and stuff. Like, and there's Transformers on the same shelf. It's just like, I'm definitely a child of the 80s, you know? I was born in the early 80s. I remember as a kid watching He-Man and Transformers, G.I. Joe, all those things, you know? All of those things together informed my childhood, and you know, like, I feel like Star Wars probably, I probably still have the strongest feeling about Star Wars, you know, and there's people who are like, who hate on the prequels and stuff, and the thing is, you know, I liked those movies for the same reasons that I enjoyed the original trilogy, and the same reasons why I'm going to love the one that's coming out next year. You know, or when
I can say definitively, I know what made the biggest impact on me when I was younger and when I watched this movie. I know I can point to the thing that made Star Wars stick out in my mind as a thing, as a world. There's that part where Luke is in Obi-Wan's hut in the very beginning, and Obi-Wan's describing Vader and saying he's more machine now than man, twisted and evil. And then you see him, and he has no body. Like, he's in the shape of a man, but you have no evidence as a young person watching this that there's somebody alive in there in any way. You have no proof, and you get none until the final scene of the trilogy. Like, right near the end.
Mm-hmm.
You get no proof, and it's just seeing him just blew my mind. Just like exploded.
Well, see, like, for me, I'm pretty sure I know what it is for me, because I still have a strong emotional reaction when I watch A New Hope and this scene comes up. Like, I get kind of choked up. It's really dumb. It's not like I'm sad or anything. It's just like this wave of emotion, and it's when it's right after. It's when Luke is doing the trench run and he's by himself. And Vader's got him in his sights, and then Han comes and saves him.
Yeah.
That part, I don't know what it is. I just get, like, this huge smile on my face and this, like, feeling in my chest of, like, I don't know what it is. Like, the best way I can describe it is that I get choked up. And it's like this super heroic moment. You know, Luke is by himself. All he's got is Obi-Wan telling him to, like, trust his feelings, and he's about to die because Vader's going to kill him. And then Han and Chewie come in at the last second, and they're like true, like, Han's heroism, that's like his shining moment to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole part where like Han like cheers him on, he says, "You're all clear, kid." And the whole, I don't know, like, just thinking about it is like making me super happy.
But see, here's the thing, is neither one of those scenes for us is in this comic. And I think that comes down to it being a rough draft. Like, I'm reading through this, and I know there's stuff in here that when I'm younger, I would have attached to and thought was neat. But there's nothing I'm seeing in here that would make me latch onto it any more than I latched onto Star Trek. And I really enjoy Star Trek. I reference it all the time on the show. You can go back and listen. I reference Star Trek. But I don't think I would have latched onto it the same way that I had with Star Wars, because I'm, like David, just really into Star Wars. I am the big nerd wherever I go.
Well, see, like, the thing is, I just tried to describe to you, like, why that scene is so impactful to me, the part where Han saves Luke. And I don't think I could explain it. I don't think I explained it very well, and I can't. I just know that that scene matters a lot to me because of the way... because of the reaction I have when I watch it. Like, I really enjoy other parts of... I mean, I love Star Wars. I love all of it. But that part is, like, the only place where I really get that super strong emotion.
I have a theory about what's going on in the comic here.
Thank you for rolling us back.
Yeah.
No, but...
Because David and I are going to go off the deep end tonight if you don't help us.
It's actually funny because I'm thinking about it, and some of my earliest memories are watching Star Trek, the original series. I can't remember a point in my life where I had not watched Star Wars, though. Like, I remember first seeing Star Trek. I don't remember not being inundated with Star Wars. So, like, I don't know, it's... And for me, it was the scariness, like the part in The Empire Strikes Back where Luke has to go into the cave.
I remember that part.
Oh, that got me. And then when he goes back to the farm, I remember being a really little kid, and he sees the charred corpses of his aunt and uncle, and it's just like, that like freaked me out. But I think the movie is just paced a lot better, because if we look at the... like, emotional scenes in the comic, there are two really big ones that kind of stand out to me. And the first one is where...
I know one of them.
The dad... Yeah, you do. The dad, like, rips off his shirt and he's like, I am only a man in my head and left arm, or something like that. And it's terrible.
He's like, I'm a head and an arm.
It's melodramatic, it's not introduced well, and it comes out of the blue, and it's one page. And then he dies. So the pacing's all wrong. You don't get a build-up of a sense of, like, oh, we should really care about this character outside of the fact that his son died. We don't get a build-up that he might be ill, or that he might be losing time, or that he's self-sacrificial. There's no real exposure. And then the second one that drove me nuts was when...
I know exactly what you're saying.
Leia turns to Anakin, and she's like, I love you. And, oh my god, the look on his face is... I get it, bro. He's just like, bitch, please. Okay, she deserves
it. What the hell is happening?
But, okay, the faces throughout this are fucked up. I could not look at any of the faces in this comic and take them seriously. Like, I wanna applaud the artist for the level of detail in the face work. Like, some of the expressions are really well drawn expressions. I'm just not sure that they were necessarily the appropriate expressions for the moment.
Well, see, like, we always say, like, what's your favorite panel? I know exactly what my favorite panel is in this comic. Like, as I was reading through it, I got to it and I was like, this is it. Nothing's going to top this panel. And nothing did. And it is purely because of somebody's facial expression.
Which one is it?
It's the part at the end of, I think, issue 7, where Leia is being tortured by Vader. And it's like the last panel, and he shocks her, and then he throws his head back and, laughs maniacally. The look on his face is just freaking ridiculous. It looks like... If he had a mustache, he would be twisting it.
Yes.
He's like, ha ha, and his hands are up, and his mouth is open, and he's like, heads back, and Leia's being shocked. It's just insane. It's completely insane. I love that panel. I was like, holy crap. This is my favorite panel.
For me, there's a face. There's one face that Anakin gives. I don't remember where it is, but there's just like dialogue happening, and he's like, the third guy in the frame, and his face is just like a huge, like, what the fuck? Like, not even a little bit what the fuck, but like when you're drunk and somebody tells you something really complex, what the fuck look? And he's just completely, I don't know, just so many of the background faces and stuff, and they change panel to panel in inappropriate ways. It's just, I had to ignore the faces when I was reading this comic, and I don't know if that was like the writer's direction, if that was the artist going off in a weird direction. Or if that might have been a way that they were trying to portray complexity in a compressed space. But whatever it was, it just, every panel was full of humor.
Yes.
The faces. And like I said, it's not because they're poorly drawn. They're really well detailed. The expressions are perfect. They're just inappropriate
they're wrong
the situation.
For this. Exactly. Like, the art's really good. And if someone was doing, like, one-page sketches at a con or something, I'd pay for a commission.
Yeah.
But it's, like, here, it just doesn't work. I don't know. Like, the one that got me and made me really think, like, oh, man, is when the little kid is holding his, like, pet whatever the fuck it is.
That, his pet, like, caterpillar?
Lizard thing?
Yeah. And, like, the series of facial expressions that he has, there's one that's really uncanny valley. Like, it almost looks photographic. But then after they kill his lizard, he has this, like, psychotic look on his face. Like, I'm gonna kill you, stormtrooper. And I get it. Like, that scene made me so sad. I hate it anytime pets die in any media.
Yeah.
Man, the kid's face. But no, like, see, it's this. It's like, there's no writing that gives you the ability to, like, get to know characters or to experience what they're going through in, like, a less truncated format. So you get all of it compressed into these insane faces.
Well, some of the, like, body positions, too. Like, there's the last page in issue 7 where the Wookiees are, like, painting their ships. Did you guys see, like, the saucy, like, sultry position Wookiee?
Yes. Yeah.
I was like, what's happening?
And there's another one, like, frolicking with a paintbrush and a paint can. Like, he's, like, frolicking through a meadow, His arms are just, like, flayed along. Like, he's skipping. And it's like, what the... This is a Wookiee. What... Like, even my preconception of Wookiees aside, they've been portrayed as these fierce warriors. Why the fuck is this one skipping through the spaceport? I don't
the
understand.
The other one is, like, doing a white, what is it, the white snake pose on the Jag.
Oh, man. So, my favorite still goes back to the scene where Leia tells Anakin she loves him, because after he makes that, like, bitch please face, on the next page he starts using hand gestures.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, either he's doing kung fu or explaining the dimensions of something to her. And then the next one, he walks away and he's like pointing at her like...
My lightsaber is this.
It's like, what is he saying to her, like, with the gestures that we're not catching? But yeah, they don't mesh at all with each other. And it seems very extreme for the situation, all of these emotional reactions. They're completely unrealistic that anyone would react like any of these situations.
Well, what's also insane is that, like, a page later, he's telling Whitson how much he loves her.
Yeah!
It's like, okay, then.
He took a nap and realized it.
Yeah.
Right? Like...
Yeah. I don't... But I think that's owed to the compressed timeline here. I think if they'd have done this even over 12 issues... It would have been better.
Yeah, I think they were trying to, like, jam it together.
Yeah.
There's two pages separating Leia's confession of love and then Anakin's.
And, like, Anakin didn't just say, oh, no, thanks. He, like, shot her down.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you... What?
It would have made... Like, he could have just been like, let me think on that one, and then, like, thought for two pages, and been like, oh yeah, I like her.
I get the sense there's not, like, a celibacy thing with the Jedi Bendu in this version of Star Wars, because he exists.
There is. Luke makes a comment to Kane about that.
Yeah.
Like, in issue 1.
It can't be a hard and fast rule if Kane's got kids.
Yeah, but you kind of feel like maybe Luke's just more conservative in the order than Kane is. Like... Oh. He hasn't been kicked out or anything. He's still a Jedi.
Luke can get away with anything because he's a fucking badass in this comic.
Yeah. Okay, oh, here's another question. Try really, really hard to pretend for a moment that you, like, don't have any bias or attachment to Obi-Wan. Who would you have liked better, this version of Luke Skywalker or Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I really like this Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, he's a complete badass. He's a total and complete badass.
Because old Obi-Wan, you're like, oh, he's an old man. But, oh, what's this lightsaber fighting he's doing? That's kind of neat. Oh, he's dead now.
Yeah.
This Luke Skywalker's like, no, motherfucker. I'm a goddamn Jedi.
I feel like if this Luke was going to haunt you, he'd be an angry ghost. He wouldn't just be like, you know, use the Force, stay calm. He'd be like, fucking kill him, Luke.
It's like, stab that motherfucker.
Yeah. I like this Luke a lot.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
But I do like the original Luke Skywalker better than I like Anakin here.
Yeah, Anakin
but this
here...
This Anakin is a lot cooler than the Anakin we're familiar with.
Well, a steaming turd is.
But this Anakin is closer to that Anakin. He's whiny and indecisive and has the long hair.
But he grows up pretty quick in these 8 issues.
Yeah, you get the sense that he's been, like, even though he's been trained, he's been really sheltered.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one is just, like, a sociopath.
Yeah.
Okay, he kills a bunch of children. He's totally a sociopath.
Okay, no, but seriously, the best drinking game you can do is Episode 2. Anytime that Anakin says something creepy and inappropriate to Padme, take a drink. It's fucking wonderful. He is creepy and inappropriate throughout the entire fucking thing.
So, full disclosure, been there, done that, because a couple years before I met you guys, I embarked on a research project for humanity that was really unpleasant, in which I watched every single thing that Hayden Christensen had been in to prove my hypothesis that he plays a douchebag in everything. The answer is yes, including the episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark that he was in the 90s.
Are You Afraid of the Dark? I completely forgot that that existed.
Even Jumper?
Yes. Oh, he was a huge douche in Jumper.
Yeah, I know.
Also, Jumper was just a fucking ripoff of The Star Is My Destination, which was a ripoff of The Count of Monte Cristo, so.
Jumper's that movie, is that the one where Samuel
Jumper
Jackson
is Count of Monte Cristo?
Not quite. There's like a middle ground. Al Bester wrote The Star Is My Destination, which like absolutely 100% is.
Okay.
But that's a movie where Samuel L. Jackson has, like, white hair, right?
I want to say yes. I don't remember.
Anyways.
Yeah, so that happened.
We're going down a dark path.
So that covers, we talked about Luke, Anakin, we've mentioned Kane briefly, which is all we have to do.
We didn't mention how much Luke looks like George Lucas.
No, let Jen say it.
I wrote that.
You wrote
David,
that?
Yeah, David needs to do this.
Say the line.
I said he looks like George Lucas.
Oh!
LOL. Yes, I wrote that, Andy.
Look, I'm not attributing wittiness to either one of you by default. I'm just attributing having written down a note to one of you by default.
It's true.
I wrote other notes, too. I wrote a note about Han.
Oh, you did? Okay, well, let's talk about Han, because okay. Han...
Well, here, let me just open with mine, because this comic was Swamp Thing as Han Solo.
Yes.
He looks exactly like Swamp Thing.
He looks like Swamp Thing, but after a shower. Like, get all the muck and mud and crap off.
Like, they have the same, like, nose, cheekbone, flappy things. They look exactly the same. Like, I got to... Like, he's on the cover of issue 1. But you can't really tell, but then when he comes out, I was like, it's fucking Swamp Thing. It's Alec, whatever the fuck his name is.
It's not Swamp Thing after a shower. It's after, like, a wax.
Yeah, he doesn't have any moss.
Yeah.
Somebody came and landscaped him.
Manscaped him.
Man landscaped?
Thing. Swamp Thanged him?
Thingscaped.
Swamp Thing. But yeah, I was like, oh my god, that's Swamp Thing. I mean, yeah. Anyways, Han Solo.
Yeah.
He's cool.
This is one of the things... Okay. No, I still like him. But I feel like the main difference between this draft and what we know as Star Wars is that the archetypes are not established for characters in a lot of roles here. Like this, I think, you can tell that this is more something somebody sat down and wrote. And some of these characters are there to perform a function, to move the plot. And some are there to be characters and to be fleshed out. And every story is like that. Except, I think in the original Star Wars, Han Solo becomes a bigger character and is somebody that you learn to appreciate because he starts out as like a stock character, that roguish kind of, I don't know, is he good, is he bad, or he's just out for himself and his money. And you get that moment in the end where he redeems himself. You get that moment of redemption that makes him into a complex character. Han Solo here is not complex. Like, there's nothing questionable or roguish or anything about him. And I think he's not the only one. There are a lot of characters in here that are just flat. And I think that's the main difference. And I think that's also because it feels rushed and because it's a condensed draft. And, you know, it's like his first rough draft, so I understand. But Han Solo is actually one of the characters I was most disappointed in to read this. Not just because he was green.
Like, I don't care that he was green. I mean, I like Harrison Ford, but him being green isn't the problem. It's just like you said, Andy, he's like not anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, Harrison Ford contributed a lot to that character. He kind of had this like wonderful affability that he brought to it, and I feel like, you know, that was part of the defining factor of Han Solo, and when you don't have that. Like, the writing in this comic for Han Solo was also really, like, kind of boring. But I don't know, like, I kind of feel without that Harrison Ford kind of impish influence there.
Ooh, good word.
There's not enough personality to hold it together.
You know, now you mentioned that, I completely 100% agree with you. Because I hadn't thought about that. And I think that's something that is really lacking here. I mean, we read comics all the time, and we compare them to movies constantly, because basically a comic book is just a really detailed storyboard in terms of why they transitioned well into movies. But even Carrie Fisher, what she brings to Leia is awesome, and what Mark Hamill brings to Luke is awesome, and I think that what you're really missing here, a lot of what you're missing here, is the contribution of an actor and their interpretation and their building of a character. I don't know. Maybe I just feel, this is the difficulty, right? Is maybe I feel that there's something missing because this is not Star Wars, but it's Star Wars.
The thing is,
it's so tough to look at this objectively and not be influenced by what we already know.
And the thing is, like, when we read a Star Wars comic, we are injecting the characteristics that we know into these characters, right? I mean, when we read a comic with Luke Skywalker in it, we know how Luke is supposed to be because we've seen him alive on the screen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so here, we don't know who this Anakin Starkiller is, right? I mean, he is a Luke Skywalker-esque character, but he's not Luke, and so we don't know how to fill in the space between panels like we would if we read a Star Wars comic with, you know, with Han or Leia or Luke or Obi-Wan, you know?
Or even with fucking Wedge Antilles.
Yeah. No, I agree entirely. Like, I kind of feel like the issue here is exactly what you said. We normally bring something to the table. And even with comics, like, you know, you start reading, there's so much history behind a lot of characters. But this really brings to light the difference between writing for film and then writing for comics, and shows that when you write for comics, at least I think you need to write more like you would for literature, because you can't forget you need to, like, actually flesh out your character, because there's not someone else there doing it for you, like a movie would have. Mm. So, like, this is actually a really good example of the fact that it's not just taking two mediums and, like, shoving them together. It weighs more in one way in some aspects than in another.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, if we're reading a novel, we get to, I mean, this isn't true with every novel, but we get to see the internal monologue of a character. You know, we get to understand what's happening in their head, and with a comic, sometimes we get to see that as, like, the thought bubbles or the omniscient narrator, or even the third person, whoever the narrator is in the comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the movies, we don't necessarily have that voiceover, third person, omniscient narrator, but we can see things happening on the character's face. You know, we can see their facial expression changing. We can see their reaction to situations. It's dynamic, right? But in this, I think this is trying to be like a movie, but it's just in comic form.
Yeah, this is a show-don't-tell problem, because they keep, like, just giving us events, and it's basically, like, Leia tells Anakin that she loves him, Anakin reacts poorly, they get attacked, and it's a series of events. And in a movie script, that works, because you let the actors look at it, and then they do the showing. They fill in the emotional blanks. But any other writing, you really need to have some explanation, like, Leia loves Anakin because, and we've seen it coming, and then he rejects her because, and we don't get that here.
Mm-hmm. And like, here we don't really know, like, we see the words that he says to her in reaction to her declaration of love, but what's his tone like? Is he mad? Is he, like, just confused and kind of stumbling his words and doesn't know what to say, so that's just what comes out of his mouth. We don't get any of that. We don't know what he sounds like or how, you know, we don't have any background into him on how he might react in that situation. And so, I think we don't get like thought bubbles or something like we would in other comics necessarily. It's just like words on a page without any, fluff, you know, there's no context. I guess you could say.
That's a good point. So is there anybody in this character-wise that you liked as much as somebody you remember from the original, or maybe a character that you liked better?
Yes.
Who?
Fucking R2-D2.
Because you can actually hear what he's saying now.
He is such an asshole, and I love him for it.
I think he is he's certainly an asshole in the movies too. Yes, we just don't know the extent of his assholishness.
So actually, maybe you guys can answer this. Do you know the novelization of the movie that came out? It was based on like the original draft, not the rough draft like we see here. But it's called like Star Wars, and it has like all three. It's a big novel.
I own it, but have not read it.
Okay, because I read it a long ass time ago, and I think they voice what R2's saying, but I really don't remember, so I was hoping we could find out, but I'll have to Google it.
I have to say, as much as I really like Tarkin, I really like Hodak. And I don't have a particular reason why, I just feel like he has a motive for doing what he's doing, and I feel like Tarkin is just a douchebag. He's just an evil, He's the mustache-twirling guy of the Star Wars movies. Tarkin's just there to be an asshole. And to be an asshole in the Emperor's stead. So he's just an asshole standing in front of an asshole. But Hodak... Well, I mean, Hodak at least... Like, go.
I was going to say, Tarkin's like power-hungry and stuff, and he wants to be a jerk to everybody.
Yeah.
That's like his motivation.
But Hodak's power-hungry too, but he wants this planet. He wants to be the one who breaks it. And he doesn't want to just blow it up. He's not just there to terrorize. He wants to conquer. And I like that as the story goes on, they're systematically conquering the planet, shutting things down, taking control. And that, I think that actually ties into what my idea of the Empire is. The Empire isn't just going around willy-nilly blowing up planets and getting rid of resources that actually might be kind of valuable because Alderaan is a decent planet. But it's just like, he wants to not only have his station in orbit and have control of the space around it, he wants to have control of fucking down to the power relays in the goddamn desert. He wants to control that. And that just, it's a kind of power hungry that is mirrored by its own meticulousness that I think is much scarier than what Tarkin is. And I really liked him as a dynamic villain, especially opposed to this Darth Vader, who is not dynamic at all. This Vader is just like,
no, he's funny. I mean, I thought he was like, my favorite moment in the comic is his shining moment in this.
But I really liked Hodak, actually.
I think my favorite character was probably Valorum. Obviously, we don't get a Prince Valorum in the movies. I mean, there's Chancellor Valorum in Episode 1, but the only thing they share is a name. This guy was pretty awesome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He, like, I was surprised when he like did his thing at the, you know, where he like rescued Anakin. I did not see that coming because he's like basically Vader. Like he's when we first are introduced to him, he seems more like the Vader we're familiar with than the Vader in this comic. Yeah, like he's a Sith and his face is obscured by a mask and he's kind of mysterious and he's a badass because they bring him in to like hunt the Jedi.
See, and he's, I don't know, because the Sith in this are portrayed as almost being like a rogue sect of the Jedi Bendu.
Or like, or a rival sect.
Yeah.
But I mean...
He rival clan or something. He used rival as a term. Yeah, you're right.
He uses, and he says clan. But like, the thing is, like, so they, they're both, it's the same like religion, you know, they both, I guess you could say worship the Force. They don't worship the Force, but you know what I mean.
The Force of others.
Yeah, the Force of others. But they have different interpretations, I guess. Because Anakin makes a comment about how he's deceptive, how Valorum's deceptive. But then Valorum's like, you know, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so they're really like the same, they're the same, but they have different outfits kind of thing.
This felt much more complex than the Sith were presented with in the movies. This feels like there's an ideological schism between them, and not this isn't good and evil. This is I believe it will bring order and peace to have a singular ruler and an empire over the entire galaxy, and the other ones just believe differently. And so it's not good and evil. The Empire in this isn't necessarily evil. It's guys like Hodak that are evil. It's the power hungry people that are evil.
Because Valorum says something in the last issue about ending tyranny. Like he's opposed to tyrants.
Oh yeah, yeah. Huh.
So it's not necessarily that he is like against. Well, he's not necessarily against the Empire, but I think he's against the Empire subjugating this planet against their will.
Yeah, I think that is it. Because they really needed... That happened in just, like, the 8th issue, right? Right at the end, that he turned.
Yeah.
I really wish there would have been more time for him to talk about, like, why he was making his decision and where it was coming from. Because that was all super interesting. I really liked all of that
like,
stuff.
Valorum, at first, he's like, okay, I'm going to help you capture the Jedi. But then Vader's going to have him executed, and I think that's when Valorum was probably like, I'm no longer cool with this.
Yeah, like, and I think he even said like Jedi and Sith need to fight on their own terms, and I think he didn't want a Jedi getting taken out like a bitch. He's like, he deserves more than that because he's basically mirror me, and I deserve more than that.
Right, they're like the honorable competition, right? They disagree on some level, but they don't necessarily hate the other person. They just don't like the way they spell the word Jedi or something. I don't know.
I feel like it kind of hints at some of the ideological differences that we see in the expanded universe, like in the games and stuff too. Like there's a sense that you get from Luke, like, oh, Kane should not have been having children or a love life. And he tells Anakin the same thing. So like, it almost seems like maybe there's a faction within that's more, you know, based on self-control. And then the Sith, I mean, you know, in the expanded universe, it's like, oh, Sith are all about individual power and being stronger and using your emotions or channeling them to gain power. Mm. And that's not really indicated here, but you can almost guess just based on other knowledge, like that ideological difference is somewhere buried in this rough draft. Because it is far more complex than what we see in the movies.
Yeah, and if you want to dive into the extended universe, Valorum reminds me a lot of Revan. Just that kind of,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
That, like, I'm not a Sith, but I'm not a Jedi either, and I am very powerful in the Force. So he's not really, I feel like he doesn't...
I mean, the closest we get in the movies is, like, who was Anakin's master?
Qui-Gon?
Yeah, Qui-Gon Jinn. He was a gray Jedi, and that's, like, you know, he's not evil, he's not mean or anything, but he questions more.
Well, and also if you read the novel Palpatine, Dooku in that is like this too.
Dooku.
Well,
Well, Dugu's the worst name, but he is.
Dugu's the best name.
Yeah, Dugu is a good one, and Qui-Gon's a good one. Because Qui-Gon does a lot of really shady shit.
Or even movies. Dooku in the Clone Wars cartoon is kind of gray. Like, he's not evil. He just does not agree with the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he thinks the Jedi have grown too powerful and corrupt in their own way and are too unattached and distanced from the people they're trying to serve. And those are legitimate points. And that is why they fall. He is not wrong. And I think Qui-Gon is the example, maybe, of what Dooku thinks they should be. And I think that's why when they were both in the Order, they were kind of pals. Because Qui-Gon does a lot of shady shit. Like, gets involved with the betting, alters fate by changing that die roll for the boy. Like, he does a lot of shady crap that he should not have done. And Prince Valorum, I think, is just in a similar vein, out to do what he thinks is right as an individual. You know, the Sith Order and the Jedi Bendu be damned. Like, it doesn't matter. He wants to do what he thinks is right, and he's powerful enough to get away with it.
Yeah. He's probably, like, oddly enough, one of the most developed characters in this comic, yeah. too.
Because all it takes is a little bit. It's just that one twist at the end that gives him so much complexity. And, like, his explanations of why he's making the decision just make him so much... That's the thing, is nobody else in here has to make a decision like that or has to change as a person like that. Everybody in here is very flat.
Well, I think that's why, you know, in this comic there's a ton of characters, but in the movie, a lot of the characters we're familiar with are fusions of many of the characters we see here.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of, like, meld a couple together to make a singular character.
Because, like, Valorum and Vader are the Vader we know.
Well, I was going to think Kane kind of morphs into Vader.
Yeah.
Kane, not just because he's a machine, but also because he was a Jedi Bendu who had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, so I think maybe the three of them are a hybrid of, you know, the three of them make the Vader we're familiar with.
Yeah, and I think
maybe not, and maybe that's too strict of a definite comparison. I think there's probably bits and pieces for many characters mm-hmm. that inform the characters that we know of now.
Yeah, and like I think this Luke Skywalker and Leia blend together to make the Leia that you know.
But then there's parts of this Luke that are Obi-Wan.
Yes, mm-hmm. Who is completely missing in this.
And obviously here, Biggs is a kid. And in the movie, Biggs has a porn star mustache.
Yeah.
Biggs grew up.
That's why he's the Dark Ladder. I don't even know what that means. So did you guys... I don't know. I was conflicted. On the one hand, I kind of liked the little bits that were nods to the original. But then at the same time, I was also a little bit annoyed by them. Like when they give like the little liners... like, when C-3PO is sitting in the speeder and he says, we seem to be made to suffer, that's our lot in life. You know, like, he says that and he's complaining. And, like, they even do the thing about, like, my joints are frozen, I don't know. A lot of the C-3PO's one-liners were carried over, and those are the ones that I remember. But it was kind of neat to see those and recognize them, but on the other hand, it kind of pulled me out, because as I was reading this, I was trying so hard to keep this separate from what I knew. Like, I wanted to experience this in a different way and honestly look at it as, like, if this was all that there was and not come to this with my burdensome knowledge of the original trilogy. And so, I don't know, I'm conflicted.
It is a rough draft, and if you think about it, C-3PO is one of the least changed characters. I wonder if some of that was, like, really original to the script and it just never got changed.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean... I don't know. I don't know if it bothered me too much. I kind of chuckled at all of the references.
Yeah, when you recognize, you're like, yeah, I get that one.
But I kind of figured a lot of them were just kind of already written in and then made their way through to the movie eventually.
Yep. Was there anything else in this that you felt was kind of weird or out of place? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I feel like we could spend a lot of time picking this thing apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote in the notes something about space hillbillies.
Oh, that was me. Like that was like early on in the. I think it was in issue one.
When they're out on that planet by themselves.
Nah, because there's a part where like there's the farmers and like the ship, I don't remember. It was like people crashing. I don't remember exactly why I thought that.
They were getting bombed.
And he said, what did I say?
He said something like, Paul, what do we do?
He says, looks like we're going to have ourselves a war, Dad. Time to get our blasters and sound the alarm. I think it's because he said get.
He did say get. You are not the only person who noticed that one. It was really out of place.
Yeah. I don't know. And that Space Hillbillies thing, I get that. And then also, because it starts, I don't know. There's something about the way this starts that makes me feel like this is less grand of a thing. Like, this is just all about Aquile? Just all about the planet. Because it is all about, I mean, they go everywhere. I don't know. It feels smaller to me somehow.
Well, that's because they're not rebelling for the sake of the universe. It's like you said, they're rebelling for the freedom of their planet, not like everybody else. It makes a difference.
Yeah. And Kane is just hiding because I guess the Sith are looking for him. Because I guess they still are trying to exterminate the Jedi.
But I don't get the notion that it's the Sith necessarily. Just the Empire.
Yeah.
Because if they were trying to exterminate the Jedi, Valorum probably would have just, like, let Anakin die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of the first episode, or first issue, my pet peeve in comics, introduce a character and kill it right away. I had no attachment to that kid, not even a little bit, and I could not empathize a shade with the other characters. I was like,
kid's
dead.
That's the thing. What they did there wasn't even trying to get you attached to the character and killing him. It was, this man is mustache twirly evil because he kills children.
Yeah, it feels like nothing. I don't know. It's one of my peeves when I read comics, and this opened with that. So I think it might have put me in a weird mood. But then we got stormtroopers with white lightsabers, which I think are sick. So there's that. It's like, just imagine like people walking around with, like, fluorescent light bulbs all lit up. my head. Anyway, you guys ready to rate this?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. David, you go first.
I'm going to give this... This is kind of hard. I'm going to give this a 3.5. As a comic, it's okay. It's okay. As Star Wars, it's also okay. But it was a fun read, and it's a fast read. So if you are a fan of Star Wars, definitely check this out. It's fun. It's a nice little peek into what might have been, I guess you could say. But it's a little funny peek into where George Lucas got the ideas for what we know and love as Star Wars nowadays. So, 3.5. It's not a great comic, but it's still a fun read, so.
Alright. Jen?
I'll also give it a 3.5. I bought the digital issues on the Dark Horse website, and I have no regrets. But on the other hand, it was kind of one of those, like, it's so bad it's good type things. the writing was just really rough. It was super rushed, and, you know, I know they had this whole script to go through in a certain time frame, but and maybe there was nothing they could do about it, but somewhere along the line, someone should have, you know, looked at that and said, okay, we need more time or less plot, and carried that through, because there was some really, ooh. Yeah, just that. There was some of that, so 3.5.
All right, and I guess I'm going to bring it. I'm going to give this a 2.5. I would say this is interesting in a Star Wars Elseworlds kind of a way, but I feel like this is enough of a departure that it's not really even Elseworldy. This is just, I don't know, this wasn't satisfying to read. It was neat to see the other ideas. I think this is a really awesome practice in editing. Not only in this comic needed to be edited, but see how awesome this story ended up with some good edits and some good changes. But neither of those are things that make a good comic. So yeah, I mean, 2.5, and the art was neat, but it was paced awkwardly, and that could have been, like you said, Jen, because of space constrictions, and maybe it should have been longer, or it should have been cut more. I don't know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. It was still interesting to read, and I agree with you, David. If you're somebody who's as into Star Wars as you and I are, I mean, it's worth picking up because it's crazy. It's crazy how different it is, and that's kind of fun to see in its own right. But I don't know. Beyond that, 2.5, it's average. Read it or don't. Cool. Anyway, next week we're going to continue our Farewell to Dark Horse series. We're going to read Star Wars in the Shadow of Yavin. This is written by Brian Wood. This is supposed to be awesome. So I'm really looking forward to this. It collects issues 1-6 from 2012. I've got like all of the singles, and the covers on this are fucking great too. I think Dark Horse, when they realized that they were maybe going to lose their license for Star Wars, they went balls out and just hired a bunch of people, and they wanted to go out with a bang. And I think the Star Wars, the thing that we just read, is a really good case of them maybe sitting down and saying, this is something we've always thought about doing, and in another 2 years, we're never going to have a chance. So maybe I should give more than 2.5 with that, considering, like, this is Dark Horse saying, fuck it. And that takes some cojones, and that's plaudible as well. But the Star Wars, I think, is another really phenomenal story. So that's next week, In the Shadow of Yavin, 1-6. If you want to know what we have coming up after that, leading up to episode 200, go to www.apsupercast.com. On the right, click a button that says Future Shows. Hopefully I have it updated. I don't know. If you have a suggestion for what we should read coming up after episode 200, go ahead and send us an email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Plus, we're on all the social medias, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, and apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah! All right, everybody. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.